So there's in considerations, there's what's primary and there's what's secondary. So primary means what's dealing with directly with Krishna and our relationship with him. Right? So that's chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham. That's direct activities. Then you're going to have, you know, of course, details of that, how you worship the deity, how you chant, all these things. But the goal of those, all those rules is directly Krishna. Right? Secondary means that the goal of the activity you're doing is not directly Krishna, but it's something that you could engage in Krishna's service. Right? So there's a gap between getting the results and then giving it to Krishna. Right? So in between, there can be distractions. Right? So that's the difference between primary and secondary. So our goal is to always be absorbed in the primary. To do that, then we're engaging the secondary. It means we're engaged in the primary, but we're also, because of, you know, having, you know, to maintain the material body and to, you know, our position, whatever we are, because we're an individual or a person. So a person has a body. Just this body happens to be material. So we have to deal with it. So then that's where all the secondary aspects come up. When all these are done for Krishna, then everything's engaged in the primary. So then basically there's a non-difference. Right? And if we see that, you know, the secondary is one thing, the primary is another, then that would be the devotional service has a mixed element to it. Right? But the point is that if you're doing a secondary activity, but you give the result to Krishna, then the effect is that of a primary. But you only get it when you give it to Krishna. Right? So if you have attachment for a particular activity, but you do it and give the results to Krishna, then it gets purified because it gets engaged in a service. And then slowly, slowly with time, we'll have less attachment for the secondary activity and more attachment for Krishna as the primary. Right? So that's why you always have to make this distinction here between primary and secondary. In the spiritual world, you don't have to make, because everything there is just being done to please Krishna. Right? So even though here those might be secondary activities, but they're only done to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Mother Yashoda cooks only for Krishna, cleans the house only for Krishna, makes arrangements for his clothing and ornaments only for Krishna. Well, here we may be doing these things for the children, but then we see them in the context of Krishna. That way they become connected. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's important that we understand the difference between the primary and secondary, because if we're not dealing with primary, we are working with secondary attributes. And then we can, if we dovetail them for Krishna, then that becomes very nice. If we forget to, then that means it's, you know, it's not as good, but then later we should try to remember. And then there's those things that aren't really useful for engaging in Krishna's service. So those things are dropped. Those things that can be engaged, we keep those and try to engage them. And then we see that we're always engaged in the primary activities. Does that make sense? So then that's difficulty comes up, is that sometimes we're looking at this aspect, let's say, of, you know, trying to be accommodating or broad-minded, that will accommodate secondary activities, but if we don't talk about how to connect them to Krishna, you're only accommodating material activity. So it's not devotional. Oh, we're not fanatic, so we don't get into those things, or we don't want to push anybody, or things. Nice, but the point is, if you're not pushing them on the secondary, are you at least pushing the primary? Teaching the primary. And if you're not doing that, then what are you doing that's connected to Krishna other than coming and smiling and they like kind of being with devotees, though they don't actually know that being with the devotees is actually a thing or it's important. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, this is where problems come up in so-called soft preaching. that much of the time it's not preaching, it's just soft. Because preaching means you're showing how in your position, whatever you're doing, you connect that to Krishna. Right? Because the idea of soft, it's about the individual, but if you're not showing who the individual actually is, it's the soul, and then they're covered by the secondary and how to engage that in the nature, in service of Krishna, how can you call it preaching? You can call it soft, but how can you call it preaching? You know, you may just get into certain things like getting to chant or offer the food to Krishna or try to read about Krishna and things. You might get into those direct activities like that or show how they can do their work and how they can do something of that for Krishna. They're cleaning their house, so it's a nice atmosphere for Krishna in their house. You know, you show them things that are easy. You may not get into, you know, how some other finer details. But the primary aspects and the direct, the more supportive secondary activities, then you're naturally going to start them there. And as they get purified and get a taste in Krishna consciousness, then those will come forward. No? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that we have to be very, we have to understand that this is then how the process is working. Otherwise, then people get distracted by all kinds of things. You know, someone sent me something the other day, some devotee, and, you know, he was announcing and, you know, very confident in his announcement of, you know, the biggest Vaishnav, you know, how you say, podcast in the world and all that. And I think there's 3,000 subscribers in that, you know, while other podcasts may have tens, twenties, thousands, or like that, devotees. But somehow or another, he's thinking his is the biggest. But unfortunately, he'll let anybody on his show that has any philosophy from any background. So he's not strict that they're just, you know, Vaishnavs that are trying to develop pure devotional service, but he'll take on anybody. And then like this, then people get distracted. Because he's presenting it as if this is a nice thing, and he's asking questions like he's an interviewer, you know, doing something really serious and all that. But then the problem comes is that so much useless mentality and thoughts get introduced. And so instead of doing a service, he may be doing a disservice. He may say, no, but this person said all these bogus things, but then the next podcast, we have someone on the show that will clear all those things. But why have the first guy in the first place? Why not have the second guy come up and describe? Because he has conviction in devotional service, so he's going to discuss about other things. You know, not, you know, you could say, no, but we're trying to show the wide range. Otherwise, how do they know? Do we invite a Mayavadi to give a lecture so that we know what Mayavad philosophy is? Our acharyas already know what Mayavad philosophy is. It's not rocket science here. You know, so it's one has to be very, very careful in these things. Otherwise, you hear devotees talking about, oh, well, you know, it's too much to try to get them into devotional service, so we'll just elevate them to the mode of goodness, and then they have a better chance in the future of taking up devotional service and all that. But then the problem comes is, why are you doing that? Since you're not bringing devotional service, then what is the thing? Then it's just become social welfare work and all this, so then there'll be that element, you know, trying to make a better world, a better place, a good. There'll be the motive passion. How are you going to bring them to goodness when your motive is passion? You know, and if you're not living a lifestyle of goodness consistently, how would you bring them to that? And someone who is living a lifestyle of goodness on all aspects, following all the rules and regulations given in the Shastra and all that, most likely wouldn't deal in that way. So people get distracted, think I'm doing something, but they're not necessarily. Does that make sense? So we always have to see is that the view is that, okay, it's about ourself and Krishna and our relationship, and then how to express that relationship as given by the Acharyas. And then we trying our best as a person to try to please Krishna as a person. And so how many aspects of the primary we can do, we do. And of the secondary that's necessary for us to do, we try our best to see how we can connect that to Krishna. Right? And we do our best. Today may not be so good, but you know, with time it develops. Point is, if you give the results to Krishna, you get purified. So next time it'll be a little easier. And depending about how great is the attachment, it might take a little longer. Attachment's less, it'll be more quickly. Does that make sense?
Patti, come here.
Yeah. Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Thank you so much. So I just had a few follow-on questions. So the first question is, if we're doing the indirect devotional service, because you mentioned that when we offer the result and then it's accepted and then purification occurs. So I'm wondering, and then obviously the detachment reduces, the attachment to the indirect activity over and above attachment to Krishna. So I'm just wondering, so is that activity considered devotional service at the point at which we're offering the results? But like up until then, because you also mentioned that the result is disconnected. I think you said it's disconnected from an activity in a way. So if we're absorbed in activity, we're attached to activity, and so we're not really thinking of Krishna, but then at the point of the result, when we offer maybe some portion of the result to Krishna, is that the point at which that thing that we've done becomes devotional service? And obviously, is it sort of more Maya, like the rest of the time?
Yeah, I mean, on one sense, that's the time when it becomes properly connected. But if in the beginning you want the result for Krishna, and at the end you're giving the result to Krishna, that means the middle is there, but it'll have that element of being mixed.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but let's say someone is not thinking about offering to Krishna, and then at the end, and they offer it to Krishna, then the activity in that, it also becomes dovetailed.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, let's say, someone's mom grows some flowers in her yard and all that. She has excess of flowers, so you're coming over, you know, you want some flowers, you know, for the whatever it is, so you take those flowers offering to Krishna. Then her whole thing of taking care of the flowers and picking the flowers and all that, that all gets connected to the service to Krishna. Right? But if in the beginning you want to do it for Krishna, but during the time you may be attached to the activity and all that, but still the determination that is it for Krishna. So there may be that mixed element between. So sometimes you remember more, sometimes less. But at the end, then you give to Krishna and then it's all worked out. Does that make sense? So that's renunciation, right? Sannyas means that you see it, it's Krishna's service, and all the way through it's Krishna's service, and the end, naturally, the result is Krishna's. So that's the position we want to get to. But if that doesn't come naturally, then through our practice, then we engage renunciation in Krishna's service. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
because from what I understand about sannyas renunciation, so sannyas, it means that the person doesn't think that the thing is there to begin with. They recognize it's Krishna's, then they're engaging that. But then renunciation is you kind of think it's yours to give up. And so that mentality needs to be purified.
Yes, and that's done by engaging in Krishna's service. So that's why for us, renunciation or any other quality is not a separate endeavor. The same endeavor is used to please Krishna, and it also then naturally, engages or purifies us in whatever position we're at. Does that make sense? So that's why we're it means our line is known amongst all the Indian lines as known as Tyagis. We're known as renunciates. Just our system, because everything will always be given to Krishna. You know, so we're Nivriti Marg. We're not Pravriti. Pravriti wants the results for ourselves, you know, and more immediate. Nivriti means the longer term. So even if one is in family life, still ultimately the whole point of it is to everything's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then it's not a problem. That is the process. It's just with time that becomes more and more natural. You understand? So it's not that it's, oh no, it's all right. You don't have to worry about giving things up, you know, be practical like that. That's one side of it. No, it's all nonsense, it's all Maya. That these two, there's a problem there. Because one's attached to karma, one's attached to detachment, but we're attached to Krishna. So if we're happen to also be attached to Maya because we're coming, our conditioning, we connect that to Krishna, and that way we gradually make everything all right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I understand. It's kind of like you don't really need to, even if it's mixed devotional service in the interim, as long as we've got the right endeavor and the right intention, and we do give the end
Yeah.
results, Christian, we don't really need to worry that it's mixed in the interim, basically.
No, because the point is it's going to be mixed, because where are we starting from? You know, so we're coming from that platform of attachment. So that something's mixed, we don't have to be in anxiety about. Means that it's there. We're always trying to purify and move to better and better positions. You know, it's like going upstairs, you move up the stairs. You know, step by step. You don't go back down and, you know, like that, you understand? So that as that's there, but the point is it's not that we're saying that something's going on, that it's all right, but at the same time we're not saying it's nonsense and you can't engage that. We're saying that doing things to please Krishna is correct and things not to please Krishna are not. So we try our best to do things that are pleasing to Krishna. And with practice, we more and more we can do that, and less we have the other things. Right? So we have a lifetime, but at the same time, since we don't know exactly how long that lifetime is, we try to do our best, you know, at all times. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's perfect. If I could ask this another question based on what you discussed as well.
Okay.
So you also mentioned about the preaching and how one sees the identity, you know, and then they explain that the identity is ultimately as a soul. And but within that they also recognize, okay, but the person I'm preaching to is also conditioned soul. Therefore, you take into account the conditioning. And then, you know, through that, you know, maybe the psycho social nature. And then through that, you encourage them to engage that in order to please the Lord. So is that like the underlying, is that like the essence of soft preaching, like actual soft preaching that's actually happening?
No, that's preaching.
Soft preaching.
Soft preaching actually isn't preaching.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just like hard preaching is not very efficient preaching, just as soft preaching is not very efficient preaching. Preaching is efficient preaching. Hard means I'm looking at what works for me, and I'm telling that to you, and I'm telling that in the, you know, no holds barred manner, which in one sense people can become convinced by your conviction. And in that way, that might attract them. And we see that, you know, thousands of people have joined even through that hard aspect of preaching. You know? And then, you know, the idea that pure devotional service and all that, then they can get into that. You know what I'm saying? Soft preaching means you're more worried about them rather than about the devotional process. You don't want to disturb them or offend them, so they become more important than devotional service. So in one, you make yourself more important, the other one, you make the others more important. But in both of them, then in the one, you have a strong standard, but it's your standard. And in the other, because you're trying to throw the net to the widest possible people and don't want anyone to go away because volume is so important, then we're going to not look for quality and we won't give standards. So even if we do attract them to Krishna consciousness, they don't understand about standards of devotional service. So they can get very easily distracted into all these secondary because we've only dealt like if we're doing with yoga, we might get into strict rules on yoga, but we'll avoid chanting Hare Krishna because they might know the Sanskrit and know that that is the Hare Krishna mantra that's coming down in the, you know, the Gaudiya Parampara, and therefore your Hare Krishnas and why you're trying to tell me that. But they have no idea. So therefore, they may do a Ganesh Bhajan or a Shiva Bhajan. They don't know the difference. So it's our own prejudices, our own biases that we're worried about, our own social prestige. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So in other words, you can say, "Is no, but so many people have done joined with soft preaching, but are they interested in direct, strict devotional service? Do they have complete faith in the process that no material thing is going to actually give you the ultimate goal, prema?" And if they do, great, nice. But we see also so many cases where they don't. They come in by yoga, and even after they're kind of a devotee, they're still more attached to yoga than to other things. You know, where we bring them in through Ayurveda, or we bring them in through psychology. And that's the discussion. They're not actually interested in more moving forward much more. You know, or some get people on vegan like this, but then when they come in the temple, they don't accept that Krishna likes dairy. And so then there's stumbling blocks here. You know? Wow. Now, is that a background, or is that actually you have some blue sky in London?
Maharaj, believe it or not, the stars have aligned. There's a blue sky. Krishna's even given us the shiny yellow thing today.
Wow. Like that. So no one's out there like that. So when the yellow thing comes out, they're not out there going like this, you know, trying to, yo, no, yo, what's that? And everything, and no. Ba
No,
banging
today.
banging pots and pans to make it go away or something, huh?
No, today we are all rejoicing. We have some sunshine.
Okay.
But more
Well,
importantly than that, we have some sadhu sangha. So I'll let you carry on.
Okay. So, I mean, come on, you know, you have the Association of Vaishnavs and sunshine. It doesn't get better than that, right? You know, right? Unless you have, you know, crumpets with some double Devon cream or something like that, and then we're getting really serious.
Marsh, don't tease us. Don't tease us.
Okay. So in here, the point is what we're looking for in soft preaching or hard preaching is already in preaching. Preaching means you're delivering the actual message of Krishna consciousness to an individual or a group of individuals, right? But in that, because when you teach someone something, you learn something by an impression that you have, you connect a new idea or thought or information to a previous impression, right? Then from that connection, then it can move forward, right? Then you make another, now that's there. Now you make another one connected to that, and that brings you forward. So that means then doing that process is what you have to do to connect anybody. So for someone that might be, the dealing is stronger, someone is more soft, someone is more special, particular language and particular, you know, terminologies or maybe specific situations or everything. Wow, Haribol. And so all these things are, that's just preaching. Right, so if someone is thinking more of the philosophy and not about connecting to the individual, that would be perceived as hard preaching. And if someone is worried about connecting the individual but not so much the message that you're supposed to, they'll call that soft preaching. But preaching means you take the actual pure message and connect it to the position of where that person's at in mentality and all that, and get the two to connect. You know, so this idea is, you can't say all these things, is that that just depends on the individual, the conviction. Prabhupada spoke to the same people and got everybody, the widest range, to connect to Krishna. But you'll see, as those who do soft preaching only work in a very specific area. And that's fine, as long as they can bring to the point of faith. But I've gone to yoga studios where after 6 weeks, they still haven't gotten them into anything about Krishna. 6 weeks. You know, and this is, you know, and they have, I can't remember how long are the sessions, but, you know, but I've seen people start off with the yoga thing. And after 2 hours, they got everyone chanting and taking prasad and doing all that. And they make so many devotees. And while these other groups, is that says, where are the devotees? You know, if they're there, are they interested in pure devotional service? Can they? Will they come Will they come to that point of firm faith where they understand that nothing else other than pure devotional service will get you the results? You don't have faith in anything mundane, that anything else, being a nice guy or, you know, doing good or this or that, that will get me, that will be my qualification. Firm faith means the qualification is that you understand that nothing else other than pure bhakti will give you prema. There are no other methods. Sometimes you hear, well, we know we have to raise ourselves to the mode of goodness and then only we can take part in devotion. This is mundane. You know? Oh, but unless, you know, these outside groups see us as good and that, and, you know, we're seeing, okay, we give in charity and all that, so they see we're nice guys, then we'll be accepted. They don't accept this. We're saying, okay, well, the Christians, Christians don't accept each other. Right? Oh, but if you don't do this, you don't accept Christ, you go to hell. Okay. See that guy over there? He's a Roman Catholic. Is he going to heaven? You know, or he's a Catholic, you know, and this is a Calvinist Protestant. Will that Catholic go to heaven? He accepts Jesus. So there's hundreds and hundreds of groups of Christians, and each one thinks only they're going to heaven and everyone else isn't. Let alone if they're from another Abrahamic, where they're all accepting the same God, the God of Isaac and the guide of Abraham and the guise of Moses. But they all say everybody else is going to hell. Then, of course, they'll all agree that anyone who's not in the Abrahamic, they're definitely all going to hell. So why should we try to please these people? You can't please them. You know, oh no, but we should dress so they can relate and all that. Are you wearing something that they can relate to? You don't think that they don't think you look stupid? You know what I'm saying? No matter what you wear, someone's wearing something better and judging you. I don't know, have you ever had the experience? If you walk down the street in devotional clothes, everybody looks at you. But no one's judging you on your social status. They're just wondering, what's this, who are they, and this and that. But if you wear karmic clothes, they're looking head to toe to figure out, you know, where you fit in social status. Maybe, you know, if you always wear karmic clothes, you don't notice it, but I wear very rare. They're always looking at you. When you're a devotee, they're just kind of looking. They're not using what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the sensuous gaze of inspection. But when you wear karmi clothes, they exclusively use that. Are you worth talking to, or that you are they dressed better than you or less than you? Are you better than them? Are they better than you? That's all going on while you're walking down the street. But you wear devotional clothes, they don't do that. But then, I feel so uncomfortable in that. Oh, okay, so you want them to be judged on the material plot? Then wear, go ahead if you're comfortable. As long as you remember Krishna, then great. But we have to understand is it's not that the material world is going so wonderfully and perfect and we're the weirdos. And so we have to fit into what they're doing because it's so wonderful and ecstatic. And then if we perfect that and add what they're doing and add some Krishna consciousness, then that's when all the butterflies start flitting and the dandelions are dancing and, that whole thing like that. And we can, hold hands and do a circle dance on that hill, over there on, in Worcestershire or something, Well, actually, better would be the moors, right? Moors is where, there's more energy happening there in the moors. And you might meet Grendel. I'd avoid Grendel's mother, though. Does that make any sense? So we have to understand is that there's just preaching. We've created this dichotomy where then Vaishnavas fight with each other over hard preaching, soft preaching. We create that. No, there's preaching, and either you're good at it or you're not. And how to improve it means you're trying to connect the philosophy with the individual. And if they don't understand, then you have to make it more individual. As a person you're dealing, but they're not developing or understand the philosophy, then you have to, are you explaining the philosophy right? So each preacher has to look at, what could I do to have improved that group, or that individual group I was talking to would have appreciated Krishna consciousness more. Not that, that's too hard, or that's too soft, because when they say hard and soft, can they even define what they're talking about? Other than using modern, social political terminology? Can they use actual our own psychology and our own things? So that becomes the difficulty, is that we have to appreciate what is preaching, right? So in the same way, if we understand what is preaching, we can understand in our own situation, then what is being connected to Krishna and what's not. If we're unaware of something, we're just doing something by habit, so we don't think about connecting to Krishna, don't worry about that part. Because you don't even know what is there anyway. What you have to worry about are the things you're aware of. It's just like you get up, morning, you fix the bed, put all the pillows in place, sit back, are they right, adjust them a little bit, this and that. That means then, tidiness is important to you. It's a value. What's important about it? Krishna, are things not tidy for him? Do the residents of Vrindavan try not to make things nice for him? Right? And so therefore, then you want to make it nice for him. So you're tidying up the bed that it looks nice for him because you can see tidiness. You value tidiness. So engage it in his Krishna service. But if you don't see tidiness, you just do whatever you do and your place looks like a tornado hit it. But you don't notice. It's fine to you. And whatever friends you come over or they don't notice it either, then it's not something you engage in Krishna service. Does that make sense? So if getting ready for friends means, maybe straighten up the old pizza boxes on the coffee table, kind of stack them up and put them in the corner, even just put them on the floor next to the coffee table, or maybe put them behind the couch, then you don't have to really worry about that aspect connected to Krishna. But if your home is everything, everything's in its... What is it? a place for everything and everything in its place, right? Then do that for Krishna. You know, you just eat anything and don't even think, notice it and like that, then you don't worry. But just whatever you do, offer it to Krishna. But if you, you know, get into cooking and technical and this and that, then try to do that nicely for Krishna. Does that make sense? You just throw anything on and walk out the door, you don't worry about it. But you care about what you wear, this, that, then do that for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what Krishna, his instruction in the second verse of the Chaturshloki is, whatever you value, if it's not seen in connection with Krishna, it's Maya. So you don't have to engage everything, because Krishna is everything, literally. You just have to engage those things that are of value to you. Because it's you as a person with your values, you're connecting to Krishna. And that's why there's unlimited things, because unlimited living entities with different natures can all connect to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj.
Yes. Okay.
Raghuleka had something next.
Okay.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. I actually did have something, but I've kind of, something you've just said, I have something's come up in relation to that too. So, in terms of connecting everything to Krishna, is that to begin with a mechanical process? So for instance, I really value tidiness and cleanliness, but I think it's very rare, if I'm honest, that I think I'm doing that for Krishna. So is that the practice for me to go, okay, I want this for Krishna now, and rather than just myself and my values?
Yes. Means the aspect is that that's something that you can connect to Krishna because you're aware of it. It means Prabhupada's saying, if you're not conscious, how do you be Krishna conscious? So those things you're conscious of, those you can connect to Krishna. Those things you're not conscious of, at this moment you won't be connecting. As we get purified, then we might start connecting them to Krishna. So in this case, okay, everything's tidy. But Krishna, he's the supreme pure. That means everything is in its proper... Why is that? Now let's say, okay, something is tidy. What's the advantage of it being tidy?
Well, that you know where it is, and...
Okay, and why do you want to know where it is?
So that I can use it next time.
Okay, and then what's the perfection of using something?
For Krishna's pleasure.
Yes. You understand? So that's one act. That's the practical side of it. The other side is when everything has a place and it's all in its place, the aesthetics are there. And so is aesthetics not used in Krishna service? We try to make things beautiful and nice and, you know, and so it goes along with everything. Everything is balanced. When everything's in its place, it's balanced. Right? And then everything can be used for Krishna service very nicely. So that's why you see is that when you have rasa, it's a matter of balance and what's there. And if it's not, that's rasa bas. Right? So all it is the same principles that are there in other aspects of the devotional service. They're actually there in everything because everything's come from Krishna. Mm-hmm. So those same kind of qualities. So of course, in a particular thing, it has a prominence of something, and so that's there, but it doesn't mean that the other elements don't work. Earth always works as earth. So if it's in the prominence, then those details of earth will be the prominence in the item. You know, water works as water. You know, fire is fire, air, like this. And so depending on the prominence or the combination, then it's going to have a certain nature it follows, right? So therefore, also in a room, like you said, you put things where it will be useful. So let's say keeping something behind the couch may not be very practical for using it. Therefore, it's the wrong place for it. If it's something you use in the kitchen, you would keep it in the kitchen. Right? If it's something you use for the cooking part, it'll be closer to there. If it's something you use for washing dishes, it'll be closer there. You know? So therefore everything has it has natural, and it's also individual. Someone wants to keep something here or there. Someone wants to keep all the things they use in the cupboards above. Someone wants to use the things that they, and keep all the stuff they don't use so much in the under cupboards. Other people want to put the stuff they mostly use on the bottom cupboards and things they don't use so much on the upper cupboard. So, you know, or on this side or that side. You just individually will work out what works for you so that you can do the service for Krishna really nicely. Does that make sense? So you just have to see how it connects back to Krishna. That's the point. So all opulences, all shaktis come from Krishna. That means all shaktis can be engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not a problem.
Thank you. My previous question was...
came out again. Is this where we sing Annie's song or something? Well, go ahead, your question.
Yeah, so if we have an attachment to trauma, something that has been traumatic, and even though intellectually we know why we should let it go, how can we let go of that attachment? Is it the process, do we just, you know, is it devotional service and we just have to surrender to Krishna?
Well, now this, instead of Annie's song, this is Anna's song. No?
Yeah.
Okay. One is by recognizing that it's there, and that's already your first step in understanding how and analyze how is it not useful, or if there's anything of use in it. You know, if it makes you more aware of something, so you be more Krishna conscious, that part is useful, but the other parts that get in the way of the service, that's not useful. So by being aware, then that makes it more clear. And then you can also analyze, why is it a trauma? What is the value that's being disturbed by that? Because it'll be different person to person. Right? Then there's the thing is that for material desires to go away, or material, you know, anxieties to go away, that's by the grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So then you pray to him by his grace. Because if you get rid of material desire and you only have spiritual desire, then working with material energy is very easy. It's one of Krishna's energies. It just happens to be an inferior one, but it's still Krishna's energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You're not too worried you're going to get too much vitamin D there or something, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So then that's the element that's there, is that we simply make our endeavor, but actually the results are up to Krishna. And so this is one of the aspects that Lord Nityananda takes care of, is that removal of material desire. Advaita Acharya is that the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, and then the application of that in material desire, you know, which also has the basis of I'm the controller and enjoyer, then one can actually be nicely engaged in Lord Chaitanya's service, because then everything you see in the context, can I, in my position and in the such time, place, and circumstances there, use it in Krishna's service or not? And if yes, you know, it is appropriate, you engage in it. If not, then you continue, and then when things are, you use that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't know if someone's told him that even if he tries to drive away from the sun because he's gotten too much vitamin D, the sun actually keeps following him. No? So even if he puts the sunshade, still the sun's going to be there. No? Okay.
The sadhu is giving all the radiance.
I see. Okay. Okay, does that work?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so you just try. You discuss all this with the Lord Nityananda Prabhu and see what you can work out.
Yeah, I think because, I was thinking it's the intellectual side of it that I am aware. I know what it is, and yet it's still there.
But that just means it's a deeper one.
Right, yeah.
You know, in other words, things that disappeared the day you took up devotional service, those weren't very serious. They were there, and by association, one's doing it, but they go away. And by Krishna's grace, by them going away, they won't develop and become a major thing. But those things that you see is after, you know, time, they're still there. Those are just deeper things. So, you know, those are more major elements of where there's been problems in the past, you know. So it's not restricted just to, you know, now. It's there. You just know that that's a major thing. And so you don't worry about it. You're aware of it. But then you it's just like, you know, the guy's, what do you call it? You know, who's it? The guy, he came out, he was a scientist. He came out to be clinically insane. They had him in the insane asylum and all that. But he came up with this universal theory and physics that then they used in economics. And then after he got out of the insane asylum, they actually gave him the Nobel Prize. You know that one?
Not the one who did the machine for World War II. See, the Enigma.
No. This was another guy.
Oh, okay.
He started off, I think, in Princeton and tossing his table out the window or something.
From The Beautiful Mind.
Yes, but in the end, when he's walking along, he's gotten the Nobel Prize, and he's walking along with his wife and that.
Yeah.
Who's over in the corner? Walking along with him, right? His friends.
Friends, yeah.
But he just keeps him, he doesn't talk to them. So you just keep them at bay, and then with time, one gets purified, they go away.
Let's go.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it'll be there more, and the time it'll be more occasional. It'll come up. So when that happens, then you know it's okay. It's working.
Yeah.
But the point is just get engaged, because these are just impurities. They're not us. They're what we've identified with. That's why they affect us. But the less we identify with them, and the more we identify as servant of Krishna, the less these will have problem. And they come up now and again, and then we keep them down.
That's great.
Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. Jai Ho.
Rasa Bihari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for taking the time, Maharaj. I guess my question is on the same lines of connecting everything to Krishna, always think of Krishna, right. Never forget Krishna. You've spoken about this in the past. It's just I always struggle with it a little. So when we this always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. When Arjun is on the battlefield and he is, you know, killing someone or doing something, what is he thinking about at that time? Is he seeing everything as Krishna, or is he just thinking, I have an instruction for Krishna, I'm following it through, I need to kill someone? Or what is he actually thinking about? How is it that he is always thinking about
Krishna? Means the mechanical point, because everything he's doing is for Krishna. So if he's doing the fighting for Krishna, then he has to focus on doing the fighting nicely for Krishna. Does that make sense? It's not that he's seeing Krishna dancing with the gopis and he's rolling around in the chariot and all that. And
okay, so he doesn't see that as I'm firing my bow, and this is the energy of Krishna, and Krishna's the taste in water, and all of these things. But he's actually just thinking, I have this instruction from Krishna, and I'm...
It's just like 2 + 2 equals how much? Okay, good. Okay, that's a very important test, because if you said 22, then we either know you read too much Calvin or you're woke, one or the other. Okay? Does that make sense? No? Okay. So 2 + 2 = 4. Okay. Now, if you're doing arithmetic equations or any mathematical equations, can you get away from all the times tables? You know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. Can you get rid of those and do some form of mathematical calculation?
No.
Okay, but when you're doing those calculations, do you have to think 2 + 2 = 4?
No.
But does that mean 2 + 2 = 4 is not there in the background?
Okay, I understand.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Means, in other words, if he's so absorbed in Bhagavan, then the things of Brahman and Paramatma are just there in the background. He's thinking how to please Krishna. So Krishna wants this fight done, and he's going to kill everyone in this battlefield. Now it's just a matter of, do you want to help Krishna? So he's doing his best to help Krishna.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else with the... Yes.
Maharaj.
Hand in the car.
Maharaj, sorry, I logged on a little bit late, but you were talking about soft and hard preaching and how preaching is just helping someone or elevate someone's already impression to something in line with scripture or changing there. And you said that the definition of hard and soft is an internal dialogue within the movement. It's not, preaching is just preaching. So, and then you said, it's just how good is one at preaching? And you referred to the expert.
Anyone else getting this? Because I'm not.
No, I think he's on the move. So, Krishna Kirtan Prabhu, your sound is not so great. You're breaking up.
I what?
Okay, now it's better. You were breaking up before, so we didn't really hear the question.
Yeah, no, the question kind of went into...
So regarding preaching, Maharaj gave the example of the yoga studio where after 6 weeks, they still didn't hear anything about Krishna. And you said that hard and soft preaching is an internal dialogue within the movement. Preaching is just giving information to people to take them one step closer. So my question is, Maharaj, how do we know when we are being, what if we are not expert enough and we don't know from an intuitive Paramatma level what we should be giving, and it's more on our ego and our own conception of things? How do we know whether we should take a bolder step and give somebody Krishna a bit earlier, and how do we know when to just be a bit more patient?
The point is that, see, it's what you're convinced of, you can give others. Right? Is he still there? Or he seems to have disappeared. Okay, so what you're convinced of, that you can give others. So it doesn't matter how much you know or don't know. It's that what has convinced you of devotional service, what inspires you in your practice, that's what you can give to others. Right? So that's what you can explain. That's the one side, because we said there's the two sides. There's what's being explained, right? And there is the person you're explaining it to, how quickly they can take it or how easily they can take it or in which way they can take it, right? So since you're preaching, it has to be of the philosophy, it has to be that which you are convinced of. And that philosophy is given to the other person in a way that they're able to accommodate it. You know, through language or examples or vocabulary that they can relate to. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, so it's not a problem. That's why you see as new bhaktas can preach to someone and they become convinced and become a devotee. They know less than you do. But they just talk about what they know about Krishna. So what you know about Krishna, what convinces you, what inspires you, that's what you talk about at the rate and the context that the other person can relate to. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's what you're doing. So that means anybody in any position, they have some faith, they can preach. So it's not difficult. So that's what I'm saying. It's a problem when we break it up, and if you're talking about Krishna, that's hard preaching. No, it's not. Or you're not talking about Krishna, so that's soft preaching. You know? So the thing is it has to be is that what you're convinced of, you talk about in a way that the other person will appreciate. You know? But at the same time, as you have to understand, is that you're not just dealing with the conditioned soul. The conditioned nature, you're dealing with the soul. The soul by nature is servant of Krishna. Therefore, giving transcendental knowledge is actually natural for the soul. You just use the medium of what their conditioning is, but you're trying to preach to the soul proper. Because if we get too much into their conditioning, we identify the living entity with the conditioning, and that's material. We have to see the soul as transcendental, but they think in this conditioned way. And I, in my position, I understand and appreciate these aspects of the philosophy. I'll talk about that. Krishna's unlimited, so any aspect will work. You know, someone's convinced about his mercy, someone else about his authority, someone else about his sweetness, someone else about his beauty, someone else about his strength or his knowledge, or it doesn't matter. You know, so I mean, you think about, why are you chanting? Why are you doing anything? You know, and so those things, that's how you can discuss with someone else. Does that make sense? Or he froze? I mean, the background is white. Does that mean now he went into a blizzard or something? Or? No.
He's back. Did you hear all of that?
The last bit I got was different people like different things about Krishna, mercy, his qualities, and then they'll talk about that. And then it
yes.
Grows.
Yes. So it's just whatever it is. That's the point. If it's about Krishna, it is transcendental, and that attracts the nature of the soul, which is transcendental. You understand? But because they identify in a particular conditioned way, then you give according to that. You give. You know, it's not about the conditioning. It's just that may deal like. You know, I always like to give the example of that. Once, maybe 20 years ago, I was in New York, and we went upstate to a program, and in that, there was a village there where there are a lot of devotees, a little community, and at the time, everyone in the community, they were all straight edge. You know, so straight edge, they all got, you know, tattoos, you know, but they're just, you know, the ink is all just the regular black ink, you know, no colors, none of this kind of, you know, stuff. And they all got tattoos, you know, they got shaved heads. When they shave their heads, you see the tattoos on their heads, you know, they got piercings. They're a tough bunch. So the heavier you talk about the philosophy and that, the more inspired they were. Right? You know, so you start off in one way, but then they have this and that, and you just have, you know, you just are just blasting them with, you know, like that. This is Maya. This is this. This is that. And they're in ecstasy. And they get really serious and really fired up. So right after that program, we went down to Boston. And somebody, you know, had a program at their house and invited over some people. And again, basically wearing the same clothes, same age, you know, tattoos. But these tattoos, I didn't know anything about it. But these tattoos had color in it. So I start talking and that, and they start asking, you know, arguing on points. And so then I really let them have it, you know. And they're quiet, so I figured, okay, everything's okay. Then, you know, I went back to the temple, and the next day I met the devotee, you know, how'd it go? And he says, well, I did have to stay, after the program, everybody stayed for an extra 5 hours while I, you know, worked out all the, you know, kinks in their brain and all that. And then I says, but why? You know, and I explained to them, you know, what was going on in that. He says, that's all right for straight edge, but these guys aren't straight edge. These are emos. Right? You know, so you know, their music has actually melody in it rather than just power chords, you know, stuff like that. So I didn't know there was a difference, you know. And so then you have to be very careful. So on the one, then you'll work more on certain emotional things, certain sentimental or personal social things. While the other ones wanted just straight philosophy and that's it. They didn't like anything that was too emotional. But this other group, you had to very much consider the emotions, the feelings, how they were going to take it. You know, so it's the same message. It's just a matter of the medium you're working through. And if there's too much, like in some of these contemporary things, there's so much of this new age and self-centered kind of and victim and all this, that it's very hard to even get to the where you can say something about Krishna. You know, because they only want to hear about themselves. You know, if you can talk to them and confirm that they're a victim, then hey, they're your friends. And if you're not, you're trying to direct them and all that, then you're an enemy. So then you might just, you know, talk about the weather and you know, move on.
It's been really helpful, Maharaj. In particular, I like the point about the conditioning. And if you engage only with the conditioning, then we're basically just speaking to them on the material level. So that's a really nice point. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay, so any other questions? Valami Mash.
Rasa Biharipur.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Going back to what you were talking about before about bridge preaching, and I guess, Bhaktachira Swami used to talk about how Prabhupada would say, 50% of my work is done and 50% is establishing Vanashram. And I was trying to work out how does Vanashram, trying to establish Vanashram, fit into that? Not as a substitute for straight up preaching, but engaging others that wouldn't naturally turn to Krishna consciousness directly, but engaging them somehow in the system. Not as a substitute but as complementary almost. How does that fit? How does that work?
Okay, so did you hear in the beginning where you're talking about the primary and secondary activities?
Yeah.
Okay, so Varnashram is always secondary. So in other words, if you have spontaneous devotional service, means by you are spontaneous is defined as you have natural attraction for something without any intellectual contemplation. You just see Krishna, you're attracted. You don't have to think, well, he's the Supreme Lord, I'm his service, and this and that. You don't have to go through any of that. That's spontaneous. You know, like, you know, brahmacharis, bucket of halava, that's spontaneous devotional service. Right? Yeah. So, that aspect, then that means if you're not on the platform of spontaneous devotional service as a consistent thing, that means then you're going to engage the secondary aspects in Krishna's service. You do as much primary as you can, and you engage the secondary as is useful. So one of the main elements of that secondary is varnashram. So when he's talking about varnashram, he's meaning the devotees, not the karmis. You know what I'm saying? I mean, how to engage your service in Krishna's service. Because we see that he already established brahmacharya grihastha vanaprastha sannyas, right? He already established the brahminical occupational aspects of the preaching and the deity worship and all these aspects, right? But how the Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra are engaged, and that's not as strong. You know, he created the farms and things like that. And, you know, so if elements are there, Govindas is there, these things. But to be able to actually understand and see how all this fits together, then that's not been established. So Varnashram, the following of that, that's devotees follow it. But it's not an identity, right? You don't have to identify with something to use it. Right? You don't have to identify with your pen to write. Right? Means maybe if you want to be a Miss Universe, you have to identify with the crown, but that's a different thing. We don't generally see that in a spiritual context, right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is that it's devotees, because the point is what does Varnashram mean? Someone is being engaged according to their nature. What is guna and karma? And so All those in a managerial and leadership position should understand how to engage somebody according to their nature. And so to just say that's all Maya, you know, that's not productive. That means you just want to see what's good for you to manage, because your vision of, you are in charge and you have a vision of what should be done and how it's going to unfold, but you're unwilling to take into consideration the circumstance that's there. You know, you're looking for time and place, and then circumstance, everybody has to adjust with you. So that's why you see people that work like that. They may be great managers and no one's doubting their managerial ability, but it's very dry and no one likes working with them. And eventually it fails, and they can't understand why, because they're a better manager than anyone else, right? But they don't manage people. They manage things, and people become things. You understand? So if we talk personally, it's just like this. The ones most against Varnashram are the ones that are most for, you know, everyone's equal, and it's all about the individuals and this and that, but that's what Varnashram is. Varnashram is just how do you identify what an individual's nature is so that it can be engaged. So that's like saying, I'm all about nutrition, I'm all about, you know, health and this and that, but, you know, food like that, that's all Maya. This is the level of intelligence we're talking about here, the level of understanding that we're talking about here. That's all it is. It's a secondary element. They'll be, but Lord Chaitanya rejected it. He didn't reject it as something useful. He rejected it that it's not the ultimate goal. It's nice, we follow it. Did Lord Chaitanya not follow Varnashram? What about his associates? They all followed. He's constant. Every couple of purports is all about Varnashram. Same in Bhagavatam. It's a Paramahamsa Samhita. They all followed that, but that's secondary. You know, if I say it's not about your kitchen equipment, it's about, you know, the application of the cooking techniques and all that and getting the result. So now would it be considered intelligent then said, see, we've rejected kitchens, we cook without kitchens. It's just about the cook. You understand? This is the level of understanding we're dealing with here. I mean, if we're talking logic and science here, this is what we're dealing with. So the Varnashram is for us. And if we're following, the karmis will naturally, as they come along, they'll fit in. But if we're not following it, how are you going to establish Varnashram for the Karmis, which is a system based on the mode of goodness, but due to personal desire, which is mode of passion, we're not accepting Varnashram, or ignorance. How are we going to establish something in the mode of goodness? It's not going to happen. So in other words, its use is simply you can understand what's the nature and what's the ability. Because let's say someone like, again, we give the same manager. They have the nature of a manager, but what's their ability? Right? Are there not levels of managers? Right? All managers are the same. The billionaire having this, you know, international empire, his management, and the guy who has, you know, you've seen in India, those, you know, sometimes you have on the corner, that there's a, you know, it's about maybe 4 or 5 feet wide, a stall on the corner, but it's split in half. So above it is sitting one guy doing his shop, and below it sitting another guy. So he can manage that much. He has his stuff. He never runs out of stock. He always knows those prices and everything. He doesn't lose money. So he's mad. That's it. He can't do more than that. You don't come back after, you know, 5 years and now he's got a big shop. No, he's the same. Come back after 50 years. He's still there. In fact, his son is there now. You understand? So that's his ability. But he can do that. He can manage his shop. But another guy may have started out there, but now you come along, the guy's a billionaire. You know what I'm saying? It means there's a few of the billionaires. Their father was a billionaire, but generally those that their father's a trillionaire, now they're a billionaire. But these all these other guys, they weren't. They were some kid on the block there, and he goes into his garage and works out something, and then boom, he's a billionaire. So that's nature and ability. So he can do his business and he can do that. You know? Or in government, you have all these different people in different levels, but are they all in the same level? You know, or someone is a career, you know, military man, but is everybody a general? You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that you have nature and ability. So you have to be able to balance the two. And so if you can't understand that, then how are you going to engage someone? Right? Does that make sense? Someone's in the temple. They want to be engaged, but you engage them in the wrong service. Oh no, it's for preaching Prabhu, and you know. Oh, but I'm not comfortable doing this. I'd rather do something in the temple. Oh, that's just Maya. You know, just surrender. And then you know, is the guy still there at the temple? You know, and if not, whose fault is it? So that's the whole thing. Know who to engage where. Okay, you're having a marathon. You send everybody out. Someone can last 3 days on the marathon. You don't send them out a fourth day. You send them out a fourth day, they go home. And then you just say, oh, they weren't sincere, and think you're getting off the hook. You know, how many lifetimes does it take for someone to develop faith, and now you've sent them home because you couldn't understand their nature and ability? So in other words, leadership is more than being in control. It means responsible. You understand? So that's why the need of Varnashram, so you can tell. But we don't identify with it. We're not that. We're all devotees. But you have to be able to see who can do what. You know, it's just like, I remember seeing one thing. I went to somebody, they invited me to this, you know, management council meeting at a farm community. And, you know, I was discussing some philosophy and some considerations there. But I remember at one of the breaks, there was something going on the corner that they were discussing about, you know, I think somebody had come, one of the farmers, like me, at this community, I don't know, it was some hundreds of devotees. There were two farmers, two guys that actually dealt with the farming, right? And so then, then they were asking them about, you know, it's like, you know, we really got to make a decision on what we're going to plant now because the season will pass. You know, the ground is at a particular, you can plow the ground when it's at a particular consistency. If it's too wet, you can't plow it. But if it's too dry, you can't plow it. And a particular crop starts at one time, ends at another, especially in the West where it's much more severe, right? And so he's saying that we have to do this. And the other guy's saying, yeah, we'll discuss it at the meeting. So that means a whole bunch of city slickers are going to discuss what they're going to plant and when they're going to plant it. So to them, it's more important their decision and when they come to that. And they're busy now because there's more important things than when we plant, because that any farmer can do. Anybody could do that. But our meeting, that only we can do because we're so, you know, special and qualified. Nothing got planted that season. And then they wondered why later then one of those farmers left. So that means then you don't understand. When it comes to farming, ask a farmer. You know, work out, don't lay for there. In between, when you've planted everything, then it just sits and grows. Now talk about what are we going to grow this year? What's the things? What are you going to do? What's all the things like that? Work it all out. Then he already knows what to do. Then you already know when's planting, seizing, harvest, seizing that. Then everyone from the farm can come down and help. That's what they do, you know, in farm communities, is when it's planting time, everyone goes and helps planting. It takes a few days, then everybody has nothing to do. Then harvesting, they're all there. And maybe in between there might be some weeding or this or that, but other than that, Prabhupada said for a farmer, he actually works only 2 months a year. So the rest of the time he's doing things connected with farming and taking care of the family and all that. So that's why he said, it's so nice in Vrindavan, 2 months they have to work on farming. The rest of the time they can just be chanting Hare Krishna. Right? So this is an example of people in management roles that have no idea of how Varnashram works and just thinks because I'm in control, therefore everything will work the way I say. But unless they're in control of material nature and potatoes, then it doesn't work. Does that make sense? You know, yes. That's also then why someone tends to preach in their own areas. You know, they say someone's in academics, they can preach to other academics, or someone who is in this can do that. It's not always like that. I remember seeing one Swami in Los Angeles. He was the president at the time. They would invite him down to UCLA, down to the campus, to give the seminars to, you know, when they have those seminars, lectures where 300 students come, they have that hall, and it was on comparative religion or something like that. And he would regularly go down to give lectures at that. The PhD is there, and he would come and give the class, and he didn't have a degree. But he knew philosophy more than the PhD did. And the PhD appreciated that, and it would invite him down to give lecture. And so he'd talk to 300 kids, I think, you know, once a week or every couple of weeks like that. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that what your nature is, what you can relate to, you work in those areas that mean something to you. And everything you have to know what they connect to. It means, in other words, knowledge is the most important. After that, you have to have influence and organization. After that, then you have economics. Then after that, then you have, you know, the individual's consideration to get the work done. You have to know that's the hierarchy. If you mess with that hierarchy, it won't work. You know, it's just like the unions. It's about the workers. They close businesses. Okay, you close the business. Great. Now where's your guy going to work? Right? You know, or the business tries to control government. But if they control government, people aren't safe. You can't do business. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to see where all these things fit. Then it's very... So for us... Varnashram is a fairly straightforward, simple thing that just gives basic guidelines on how secondary things are engaged in Krishna's service. It doesn't define primary. So say, oh, we don't need Varnashram. That's great as long as you're in the temple and just doing that and full-time doing, then you don't have to worry about it. You know, the brahmachari in the temple doesn't have to worry about it other than etiquette. He has to know who's senior to him and respect that. But if you're going to get into leadership, you have to understand that. And for the individual, if you can tell who you are, then you'll be able to understand who other people are. And if you don't know who you are, you can't identify anyone else. If you ask someone, what is your nature? You know, like that. Oh, no, we're devotees. We don't care about that. Great, fine, but that person can't make decision on someone else's life on what they should do because they don't even know who they are. You know, it's like, oh, everybody should be equal. Okay, let's have the whole temple come in and what do they have to say about, you know, what this policy is you want to get done? Great, that's fine. Let everybody decide what we're going to have for lunch. You know, run that one. That's a real fun one. You know, you'll never. I remember once it was that there was one school was running and it had one consistent administration, and everybody else wanted to do something more modern. They didn't like all the old traditional stuff, and so then that the management changed. And then it was like, okay, all glories. Now we can do whatever we want to do. They brought all the parents together. And for 2 weeks, for 6 hours a day, they argued for the whole 2 weeks, couldn't come up with something that they could all agree on, and decided they'd leave it to the new guy, whoever, whatever he wants to do. So as soon as you make it everybody, then you have nobody. I think In Hindi, I think there's a, or maybe other, but in language you have an item called barwari. You know the term? Barwari, it means everybody owns it. Baro means 12. It means it has 12 owners. Therefore, it won't get taken care of because each one thinks the other one should take care of. So that's what you have. Because everybody thinks, oh, this is important, they don't know what else, and it never gets taken care of. You know? So it's important to appreciate that the Varnashram is for the devotees, but it's not as an identity, it's just so that you know what your nature is and how to engage it for yourself and for others who are responsible to engage others, that they can identify nature and help them engage themselves. That's all it's for. But it's taken as this whole big thing, and oh, then you're saying we're this and that, and then we have to do this and that, and you know, it's like, what are they talking about? You know? It's so much more simple. I mean, Prabhupada explains so much, you know?
Thank you, Marsh.
Yeah? Okay. Very good.
We have about three more questions. So, Balan, am I perfect? Could you?
Hi Krishna.
Jai Ho.
I just had a question on something you mentioned today about how everything comes from Krishna's desire. And often we hear that we should align our desires with Krishna's desire.
Right.
But at the same time, we understand that Krishna likes the devas to have their individual desires. Like one example is the cowherd boy when they desire fruit in the forest. That's kind of an individual desire, but it's also for Krishna's pleasure at the same time. So my question is, if we, like, does Krishna have a kind of ideal predestined path that we should follow in order to sort of service and tune into that? Or is it to be surprising Krishna by in an endeavor to please him? How, which one of those would be?
Okay. Well, yes. Means the first thing to look at would be that Krishna's idea is that he as a person is always interacting with the individual living entities as persons. So it's about being personal. It's not about predestiny or being surprised. You know, it's a matter of what's natural, what should go on, you know, like that. So it's a matter of seeing, okay, what are the things Krishna, it's about pleasing Krishna. That's the Krishna's desire. That's the Icha Shakti. Then you're going to perform to please Krishna. Then you have to perform a particular activity to get a result that's pleasing to Krishna. That's the Kriya Shakti. And then to perform that activity, then you have to understand the knowledge and the situations and the skills around that activity. You know, who's qualified, who's what, how it works and all that. That's the Jnana Shakti. So we see is that the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, their business is just supporting Krishna's desire. So when that's understood, then you can see you have that personal, you have that element of desire and uniqueness, but at the same time, is, you know, the knowledge and skill has to support that. If we think knowledge and skill is for the purpose of supporting knowledge and skill, then you've missed the point. No, it's for pleasing Krishna. You think, oh, it's just about pleasing, it doesn't matter what we do and all that, but then why is it there's knowledge and skill and action? In other words, they go together. Whenever you have the thing, is it this or that, you can understand it's neither.
Right.
So in other words, in the predestined path, you see advantages, but you see disadvantages. In the surprising, you see advantages, but you see disadvantages. So therefore, there's confusion. Take the good things from the surprise and the predestined, you know, and put that together, and bingo, you have what it is. And what is that? That's the path given by the acharyas. You know, so that's why Jarda Bharat made that point. You're following the path given by the great personalities in their footsteps. You don't imitate, you follow their footsteps. So then that's the whole point. What's the principle that's at work here? And then engage that in Krishna service. So you're an individual, but the point is you're an individual, yes, but that individuality is based on what? Is it based on your relationship with Krishna? Or is it based on your material conditioning? Right? So therefore, if it's based on your direct relationship with Krishna by your rati and your spiritual form, then, but still, you have to follow in the footsteps of those who are leading in that particular service. I mean, the cowherd boys are doing, but they're following Sudam, Sridam, Subal, or you know, like this. They're not just doing things on their own.
Right.
You understand? You know, yeah. all the parental rasas all following Nanda and Yashoda. They're not just doing their own thing. Krishna comes home from the field and disappears. And Mother Yashoda, where is he? Oh, I thought, you know, he always goes to your house. I thought it would be a nice change for him to come to my house. No, you don't do stuff like that. You understand? So you're always following authority. But there it's spontaneous. And for us, then we have to follow the authorities by the rules and regulations because we don't have that natural spontaneous love. Right? But they've given it for the purpose. It means by following Vaidhi Bhakti, it will bring you to Bhava Bhakti. By Bhava Bhakti, that will bring you to Prema Bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So the effect of sadhana is bhava. We don't say sadhana will give you prema. We say sadhana will give you bhava. Bhava will give you prema. But if you follow that path, because the one goes into the next, then through that you can get to, our goal is prema. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore, the sadhana bhakti will purify us and bring us to the platform of pure devotional service. From that platform, then it can go into pure unalloyed devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, it's not a matter of surprising Krishna and all that. It's a matter of doing something that's pleasing to Krishna. We don't know Krishna. The acharyas know Krishna. So we just take what they say Krishna likes and we do that. You know, so therefore, it's been given. Sanatana Goswami has pointed out that, you know, when you worship the deity, you worship with 16 items. Of these, then Krishna especially likes 5, right? You know, the nice outfits, nice ornaments, the nice flowers, the nice fragrances, the nice food, like that. The deity form, the archa, likes the bath the best out of all the items. You know, that's the uniqueness you can do for the archa that you can't do for the others. You know, the yantra likes the mantras. You know, like that. You know, so there's things that the acharyas point. Otherwise, we don't know. And so we just try to our best to follow what they've given us. And so that's the whole idea, is that we engage ourselves the best we can under authority in Krishna's service. And then everything works out nicely.
All right, so that principle of individuality works better on spontaneity on the conditional patch.
Spontaneity on the spontaneous on the how you say condition platform is you know, hey, you guys, you know, hey, are you guys hungry? Yeah, I'm hungry. What do you want to eat? Hey, let's eat pizza. That's the spontaneous platform, but that's not necessarily devotional. So on the material platform, we're trying to be spontaneous. Right? There's always that tug of war between it has to be regulated, it has to be this, or otherwise you don't get results. And that's how you get the activity, gets you the results. Without that, you don't get. Anybody who's a billionaire, he didn't just say, well, I spontaneously did this, and then I did that, and one day I was a billionaire. And they never say that. Never. Not one of them. They say, you do this, you work hard, you keep at it, and then this, there. Just they happen to go from a garage to a billionaire, you know, in, you know, how you say, 2.7 seconds, you know, like that. So, but the point is nice. But the thing is, then there's the experience of that. That's where the spontaneity comes in. So they'll say, oh yeah, he's too stiff, he's too dry, he's too this, you know. But the whole point is in the material world, how do you bring these two together? Because if you want the result, you have to follow the process to get it. But at the same time, as we want this spontaneous happiness, but this spontaneous happiness never really actually makes us happy. Why? Because the material world, spontaneity simply means it's not boring. So we're saying he's so spontaneous. All it is he's doing something that's not boring. He's not actually actual spontaneous. It's not positive spontaneity like in the spiritual world. It's just removing the negative aspect in a unique way. So when we get rid of, we're bored. So when we're not bored, we say we're happy. We're hungry. We get rid of hunger. We say we're happy. We're tired. We get rid of the tiredness. We say we're happy. We're not doing anything positive. We're just getting rid of the negative. So that's the point, is that spontaneity here just simply means we're totally into it. We may get an experience, but when you come back after some years, are they still doing that? Now, 5,000 years ago, when we were hearing about it and all that, Mother Jashoda, she's serving Krishna and everything like that. Now, 5,000 years later, here, we're hearing about it, and it's still going on. She's still just as much in ecstasy. And what we don't know about is that's been going on eternally before we heard about it. So that's the thing, is that there is nothing gets old, no one gets jaded in the spiritual world. Here people get jaded, right? Because it's not good. Even though in China jade is considered auspicious, but somehow or another, if you become jaded, you're not auspicious. So work that out, I have no idea. It's just like when you have in the kitchen, you have that funny little box that, you know, you can grind your fingers off on. They call it a grater. Now, grater means something becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. But you put something on this box, it gets smaller and smaller. So why don't they call it the smaller rather than the grater? Yeah, but who knows? You know, like that. It's yes, the material world is weird. Okay? So the spontaneity means you just naturally do the service for Krishna. But if that spontaneity doesn't follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, it's bogus. It's useless. You can say is, no, but I, you know, unless you can break the rules, do that. It's just like in music, in jazz. People just improvise, but they never, ever, ever break any rules of music. In fact, if you ever talk, I was surprised once. I remember in high school, there was a bunch of these kind of kids who were in music class, theory class. And suddenly these two guys start talking about, well, you know, but hey, if we put that into 9/7th time and this and that and like that. And the teacher says, yeah, but that wouldn't work, you know, this and that. And I'm suddenly going, what the hell? Where did this come from? So the thing, you talk to a jazz, he knows music. You know? So that's the thing. They know. They're following the things. And even if they don't, they knew it last life, and in this life they're following it spontaneously. They're doing everything right by the book, though they may not know why they're doing it, but they just know this is the way you do it. So you can't go against Krishna's, it's Krishna's energies. The energies are serving Krishna. They know perfectly how. You go against the energies, it won't work. Therefore, this so-called spontaneity we call is actually whimsicality. It's being whimsical. It's not spontaneous. Spontaneous means you naturally want to follow those things and do those things. It's not that you have to be convinced intellectually that this is what you should do. You want to do that. You know, if you want to spontaneously cook for Krishna, does that mean now you go get a few lug nuts and some, you know, 20 weight oil? Oil and all that, but no, we want to make it a little bit richer in that. Maybe we should use 40 weight and all that, but at the same time, do we want to use the synthetic or do we want to use the more natural and stuff like that? And you know, like that, and you know, but as it gets a little heavy and all that, so maybe if we put in some antifreeze, it would kind of give some freshness and some lightness to it and everything. And is this going to work? No, it's not even going to work on your car. So that's the whole thing, is that the methods are already there. They're eternal laws. But in the spiritual world, they follow those spontaneously to please Krishna. And it's just about pleasing him. It's not about the rule. Vaikuntha is about pleasing God through following these rules and making it about them, make it very grand because he's God. But in Vrindavan, it's just about pleasing him as a person. And these are the methods that you can please a person. So here we don't know how to please a person because these things are human, right? And there's 8,400,000 species. And so after millions of years and lifetimes, we finally come to the human form. It's like, we, you know, how do we know what to do? Therefore, the acharyas tell us what to do. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, Marsh. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Param
Nityananda Prabhu.
Krishna Maharaj.
Jai Ho, Jani Tai.
Good to see you after so long. I wrote a little letter to you through Swami Radhika, and she thought it might be nice for this session, so I'll just quickly read it.
Okay.
Last year, during the beginning of the pandemic, I was working with a devotee by the name Ian Roberts to help the Greater Manchester Combined Authority become a little bit more focused. He had developed something called the Collaboration Canvas, which was basically Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but starting with Prayojana, then Sambandha, then Abhideya. This reminded me of the good times when you were teaching us about the Chaturvyuha. Somehow, Ian's work didn't sit well with me, however. I felt it was in the mode of passion, lacking an understanding of the importance of Sambandha Gyan before Prayojana. Could you speak a little bit about the Chaturvyuha, please? It's been a decade exactly since you last taught us about it, and I imagine you've had so many more revelations on the matter. As a creative consultant, could you also speak about the role of creativity based on Shastra within the Chaturvyuha? And lastly, could you also speak about the importance of having a balanced approach in the workplace between hierarchy and the collaborative modules? Thank you so much, Marsh.
Okay. So between hierarchy and lowarchy, so to make sure that they're not killing each other. Okay, and here is that one has to understand is that when you're dealing with these three, it means you have Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, right? So Sankarshan is the knowledge of the field and everything, the relationships and all that, just basically how they work. You know, what can be activities, what can be goals and all that. Then Prajumna will be the intelligence, the proper attitude, and the application of that knowledge and skills, right? In any particular, you know, engaging the senses and the right attitude. So in other words, you have the knowledge of Sankarshan, but if it's not applied with the right attitude, right, you won't get the proper result. And Aniruddha then means that result that can be gained and the experience of that result. Because it's not enough to get the result. If you don't get the experience you wanted, no one considers the result of value. Everyone works hard, gets a result, but even though it's exactly the result they expected, but afterwards they all kind of go, oh, wow, that's it? No one's pleased, right? So that's why then, depending upon the attitude that you perform an activity, that depends upon the experience you get out of the result. So if someone does an activity, the correct activity with a bad attitude, the result that'll be gone might be correct, but it will also give a bad result in the effect. Someone does it in a good attitude, the result will be taken in a good way, right? So now, but those three, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, they're all serving Vasudev. So Vasudev is the Supreme Lord. So it's about our relationship with Vasudev. And then these three aspects, then they serve Vasudev. You understand? Then it makes it very easy to deal with this. That's the Pancharatrik approach, that they'll divide it up like this. Like, you understand? So Vasudev means then all these three are being engaged nicely in Vasudev's service. So you have the proper knowledge, the proper attitude and activities, and you understand the result. Now, if you talk about the goal, that's nice. You can talk about the goal to get people goal-oriented, but at some point you have to talk about why that's the goal and what knowledge it takes to get that goal. So if you don't connect the two, then there'll be a problem. So even in strategic planning, you have those who, okay, we have this and we can do this, so therefore we can get this goal. Or we want this goal that requires these activities and therefore we need this situation. So however it is for the audience that you're dealing, you can work either way, but you have to get at the point where they understand how all these three are related together for the purpose of then serving the Lord, if you're dealing with the devotee community. If not, then that element of means what's their ultimate point, because it's about there has to be the greater thing. And then it's just a matter of if you're working in corporate, then that's going to be, you know, how you say it's going to be the ultimate goal will be that kind of you have a squiggly line, you kind of like you start at the top, you do a little squiggle, then you come down and a little squiggle, and then you do another little one like that. Does that make sense? And so if you're not attaining that, you're not getting the goal. Does that make sense? Right. We're talking about the British Isles here, right? Yeah, so then that's going to be the goal. You know, you cross over to Calais and then it'll be that funny little E with the line. If you cross the pond, it'll be an S with the little lines through it. Does that make sense? So that's the goal of corporate. They don't want to tell you that's the goal. They want to say it's about being nice and this and being sustainable and all that. No, these are elements of attitude. I mean, their position that they'll use because people will appreciate them. Right? But the ultimate thing is to get the result, the goal. So if one understands it in that context, then it works a lot easier. There's less confusion. But the point is you have the knowledge that's being applied in serving the Lord. You have the attitude and engagement in the activity, engaging the senses in serving the Lord. And you have the goal. Because if you don't know where the goal is, you don't know where to go. But if saying just goal, unless you understand how to get there, what's the point? So the point is you can do it either way. This is the goal we want. What do we need to get there? Or, this is what we have, this is what you can do. You know? So in self-realization, we're starting with ourselves. So we're talking Sambandha, and then you have God and all that, and then you get to the goal. But if they have the community and everybody, we all want to be happy, you know. So, okay, great. But how do you become happy? You can only be happy if there's this kind of attitude and activity. How do you get that? There's this knowledge. Without that knowledge and without that, you're not going to be happy. Right? Does that make sense? So just like, let's say you're taking in a suburb there in England or something there. So, okay, they want to be happy. How do we want to be happy? Okay, we want to be happy. How do we want to be happy? Well, we want to have a barbecue. Okay, that's going to be the activity, right? Okay, but how do you have a barbecue? Well, we have to have these ingredients and this knowledge and know-how to be able to have a barbecue. So you connect it all together, right? Did that example work? Yeah?
Thank you, Marsh.
Okay.
And Kanchanapeli?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for all your wonderful explanations. I truly enjoy observe your kind of exchanges of relationship with other participants here in other bodies. Okay. I actually have a question about something which coming and is around the corner. It's a festival, Radhastami. And I just want how we can prepare our minds and also attitude, you know, in nicely serve.
We have the face.
Radharani.
Okay, yes. So how can we serve for Radharani?
Yeah.
The best way to serve Radharani is to do nice, it means it's always nice things for Krishna, right? It means, in other words, the goal is something nice for Krishna. But now, Radharani, being the best devotee, she knows best how to serve Krishna. So therefore, if we make nice arrangements for Radharani, then that means she knows best how to engage that all in Krishna's service.
Okay.
Does that make sense? But we always have to remember is that it's ultimately is that our service to Radharani is not, I mean, Krishna is not direct, it's through Radharani. And even that, our service to Radharani is coming down through the six Goswamis, through the previous Acharyas, given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And then the Vaishnavas explain that to us. Like that. Yeah, you understand?
So
cook something nice for Radharani or that. She'll offer it to Krishna, or you make a nice outfit for Radharani, then she looks beautiful for Krishna, or nice flower arrangements, then everything looks more wonderful for Krishna. So it's connected with Radharani and her service to Krishna.
Will you give us some kind of particular, maybe Vaishnava song, where we can concentrate our minds on Radharani?
I mean, you have that Rupa Goswami is that Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Dayate.
Okay.
That's generally the song that they would always sing on Radhastami. I don't know about these days, but before, in the 70s, 80s, that's the song. Because that's the song by Rupa Goswami.
Okay. And would you mind to share any pastimes like with Radharani, but from Mayapur? I've never been in Mayapur and I'd love to hear at least some stories with Radharani from Mayapur about her.
That you probably have to ask Janani Vas Prabhu.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. I don't think there's anything else from anyone unless anyone's got something burning.
There's a hand over there.
Yes, Sarasa Bihari from
Marge, if I can go a little bit off topic and talk about homeschooling, and could you just, like, we're thinking about homeschooling my son. He currently goes to school at the Krishna Avanti school, and we're thinking about putting him out and putting him into homeschooling. I'm trying to understand the pros and cons for child, I guess, according to individual natures, like which natures suit homeschooling versus being at school?
Well, I mean, if they have an ability to, you know, respond to some teaching things and they can work a bit on their own and all that, then the homeschooling can work very nicely. So in other words, they have projects they're doing or different things they're doing, and with some guidance, then they can do them. And, you know, they themselves are inspired. You can tell them what to do. They're inspired. They can do. Then generally the homeschooling can work very excellently, right? But if they need a very structured environment where everyone else is doing it, the teacher's constantly there and constantly seeing that they're doing it, then you find a school classroom kind of environment is better. But I would say is that the homeschooling works very well. I mean, previously most people were studied at home, right? You know what I'm saying? When Princeton University opened, I think there were the professor and 8 or 9 students, you know? Oxford would have been the same. You ever seen the original building at Oxford? A little dinky thing. You know, it's like, you know, that was the university. It's 2 floors, you know, and this room was, you know, science, and this was math, and that next room was this, and, you know, it wasn't that big. Now they're very big, but the point is these things all start off small. So if someone can work in all that, so the advantage of also homeschooling is that they're at home. You don't have all the other things like that. This more controlled environment. If outside, then the influences aren't so great and all that, or they don't get along, then being in the home environment is going to be nicer and all that. And so that's there. But at the same time, is if you have opportunity to associate with Vaishnavas and that and programs and others, you should do that so that they also have that element of working, you know, means learning to, you know, live and work with others. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Marge. And some people use the argument, maybe my son is only 6, so not at this age, but at a later age, that they should get used to working in an environment with other people, like in secondary school or university, because when they go out into the world to work, that's beneficial right to them.
Okay. Just let's take that one, because that's always a really, really good one. Okay. Let us say they're in 3rd grade. Okay? How old are they in 3rd grade?
8.
7, 8. Okay. 8. Okay. 7 turning 8. How old are all the other kids in their classroom?
7, 10, 8.
Okay, now sometimes if the school's really big, there'll be many classrooms full of 3rd graders. How old are they?
7, 10, 8.
Namely, one place in the material, the quote-unquote real world where everyone around you is exactly the same age as you. Just one. So how is that preparing him for the world? So in other words, if they're running a one classroom where all the grades are in one classroom, they do everything together, they play together, they eat lunch together, but when they're studying at their own levels, that's more in reality of the real world. And that's how all classes used to be until the modern educationists thought this is not good, we should break them up into our own things. You know, they'll study better. And then at the same time is, okay, maybe they learn their topic, but the problem is socially, you know, it's just like, have you ever seen, you know, a movie on high school? Yes. It's hell. You know, I remember one comment by one girl. 95% of the boys in the high school are running after 5% of the girls. I think that covered the curriculum, didn't it? No, excuse me, that's not the curriculum. That's the syllabus. Right? So where is that going on? Where is that? You know? And you say you interact with others. What is this interaction? How many friends do you have? You're in a high school that's got 1,000 kids in it. How many do you actually hang out with?
2 or 3.
That's it. And therefore, when you get that liberal person who has the liberal modern philosophy, and they get together with their friends, how many do they have in the whole wide world?
Same.
Two or three. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, those people that are home have the big families, have the big community and all that. They have friends. How many do they have?
A lot.
So which one represents the real world, what people are looking for? Because those ones that only have two, three friends are the ones that are always talking about community that they never have. And the ones that have community don't talk about it. They just do it. So therefore, take a lesson from a duck. You understand?
Yeah.
You have a duck. If you pour some water on a duck, what happens?
It goes off the sides. And...
yeah. Hence the saying, water off a duck's back.
One thing I was struggling with is, because we only have, he's the only boy at home, apart from me. How much interaction do boys need with other boys? Because he has, you know, he likes to wrestle and he tries to wrestle his sisters. And my fear is that in a homeschooling environment, he wouldn't get enough male association.
Okay, but let's say he goes to the school. What is that male association going to be? What are they wrestling with?
Well, they wrestle with each other.
At school? Actually down on the ground wrestling and all that? That's called going to the principal's office. But if they're out on the playground, since it is cement, are they down on the ground wrestling? No. What are they doing? They're running around and chasing the girls. Maybe not in third grade, but I think it was from fourth or fifth grade. That's all the guys did was just chase the girls around the playground. I was like, well, what's going on here? This is weird. You know, but it turns out I was weird, you know, so. You know what I'm saying? They're still running around doing that, and I became a monk. So, I mean, so, yeah, so. The point is that, therefore, do you have other friends that have boys?
Yes.
So you just spend some time with them. You know, go to the house in the evening or on weekends or during the days or, you know, like this. You just make a community of that. And if you have others who are interested in homeschooling their kids, you can work it out that you do it at one of your houses. 2, 3, 4, 5 kids come together and they study together. You know, and if somebody's into it, then you take care and you give the support that needs to be able to do that. Or do it or rotate it or whatever works, you know. Like that. The point is of all the kids in the school, like I said, there's 1,000 kids in the school. They can only relate to 2 or 3. But is it only those 2 or 3 that they're interacting with all day? What about those other 10 or 15 that they hate that they get to interact with because their locker's next door to them and they close their locker when they open it and they take their roll on their lunch or they knock over their drink or they take their seat or they say, you know, what about that stuff? Because from what I understand, this goes on a lot in schools. No?
Yeah, some people use that they think that that's a positive thing, that it toughens them up.
Okay, great. We're going to come over to your house and, you know, and chop down all of your roses and all that. And let's see how that makes you tough and strong for Krishna. That's it. All it is because they can't lead, they can't discipline, they can't set proper example, they can't make the standard the way it is. Then they say, oh, it's good for you. What if it happens to their kid? If it happens to their kid, do they tell them, what's the term they use? Get it together, you know, quit being such a wuss, you know. Is that what they're going to say to their kid?
No.
If they're a family that does say that, then yeah, it works for them. And they're tough guys. The father's tough. Mother's tough. You know, it's all tough. Then yeah, they say that. It's nice. But then go hang out with those guys. They'll make them tough. But all these others, it's just talk.
Yeah.
There's no question of it. Do you still have caning in the schools in England?
No.
Why not? Because that makes them tough. Six of the best. Come on. That makes leaders. You know, all those guys that got six of the best, they all became prime ministers and this and working in Parliament and the House of Lords and this and that. No? So then, what are they talking about? You can't even call him a boy now. Because no, but we know, what if they think that they're a girl who's a boy, who's a dog, who's a female, who's an elephant, who's a unicorn, but who's, you know, a pink purse, who's actually a pair of ballerina shoes, but they know who they are. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, Raj.
You know, we're not talking here the red shoes, right, you know. Because we have to remember, in that, they died, right? Red slippers, that's what it was, the red slippers, yeah. You know, so you know, it's all talk. It means if the person you know is a really down-to-earth person and that, and they're saying some stuff, then you might listen to those things, but then maybe go and hang out with those people. But if they're just talking about it, oh no, but it prepares them for society. How does it prepare them for society? You know, do they stand up to bullies? Are they out to go out there and make it all happen and all that? Are they?
The opposite. No. They get trauma.
Yeah, so then how did it prepare them? It just made them neurotic, that's all.
Yeah, exactly.
So the point is you have your nature, you have your kids, you do what you think is best for that, and don't worry about anybody else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
And then find other devotees in the community that are like-minded and associate with them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And for someone else, whatever they're doing, someone's homeschooling, someone's making their own school, someone's going to the regular school, someone's going to a private school, it's whatever works for you. You know what I'm saying? But there's no problem in homeschooling. I mean, before, that's how, you know, everything used to run before. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, I mean, and if they're into something that makes you, you know, ready for the world, then, you know, when he gets of age, have their kid join the military. That'll straighten them out. You know, 6 weeks of boot camp, and you know, they'll see the world differently. Are they going to send their kid? No. Then just stop talking about make them tough, make them this. Then go to boot camp. You know, wait till you're 18. You know. I'm not sure. In England, you have schools that are meant for getting into military schools, but from a younger age.
There are certain schools that do prepare you for that.
Yeah. So then, send your kid to that school. You know. You'll probably find more kids from those schools are leading personalities in the government and the economic community than from the state school. You know, anyone from the state school, they did it themselves. The other ones, they grew up in that environment through networking, then they did okay. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
So don't worry about it. Everybody's got an opinion. You know, it's like, what is the name? Oh, I can't remember his name. Yeah. One of those tough American cowboys, you know, back in like the 50s and 60s. Can't remember what guy was. But whatever it is. He made the point, we're adjusting it a bit here. He mentioned, he says... Opinions are like belly buttons. Everyone's got one. You know, so therefore, who cares? If it's people you know and value and they give good opinions like that and they say something, then take it seriously. But others, they're just talking one thing and doing something else. Then it's why get so worried about it? You do what you want to do. The point is being at school, is it about hanging out with males and all that? I mean, isn't the well, at least you'll have less of a problem of that, because then you don't have the problem of the CRT and that the systemic racism, so that your kid is actually the cause of all this. So you'll miss out on that. Right. So it's just you find those people that have kids and like this. And the point is, you know, you like the families, you like what they're doing, how their kids are turning out, you know, how they interact, the personalism that they have with their kids, the discipline for their kids, you know, the emotions that they put in and like that, and just associate with them and don't worry about anybody else. That's the real world. You can say, oh, but that's being, you know, you're not being wide and broad. It says they're not doing beyond that. Who's at a Black Lives rally? Only people that are there doing that. Do they go to something else? Are they going to go down to the Jesus Loves You rally? No. So it's like all this talk about being, you know, this and universal, that they don't do that. Person who is just is. So only by devotional service can you see everybody as the soul. Then you can actually deal on a universal platform. Otherwise, if you're not seeing the soul and on that platform, you are not universal. Guaranteed. Money back. You know, it means you can book, you know, 1,000 shares in that one. And you'll make profit. Don't worry. Because the thing is it's just talk. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you want to get, you know, that just those who are, you see, are mature and thoughtful in that, and associate with them. You know, they have some values, you associate with them. It doesn't matter what their background, where they're from, they're worth hanging out with. Is that all right?
Thank you, Marge.
Okay. Jai.
Hey, it's actually time now.
Okay.
It's gone very quickly, but thank you very much, Marge, for your association and for your kind sharing of your wisdom. And thank you to all the devotees who attended. Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi Haribo.
Haribo.
Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai.
Jai.